Now it's time to meet Rick Mitchell, and he's the acting Belgrave team leader of Ambulance Victoria, and he's going to tell us about how to cope during those hot summer days. And we've had a few lately, and I guess we're going to have a few more to come. Good morning, Rick. How are you there?
Going very well, thank you, Nigel. Yeah, thanks for having me on your show today.
Excellent. Thanks for giving up time on what I believe is your day off. So that's pretty special. Thanks for that, Rick, and thanks for the work you do, everyone at Ambulance Victoria, because you guys do a terrific job, and I've got a great admiration for you and what you do every day. I mean, I couldn't do the job myself. We've had some very hot days over the last few weeks, and perhaps you could tell us why hot weather can be dangerous for us, and perhaps who is the most at risk in the community.
Yeah, I can certainly. It's kind of like the first lot of hot days Victoria's had, really. We've got the rest of January to go and February to go as well, so no doubt a lot more coming. The extreme heat can certainly cause a lot of heat illnesses, heat cramp and heat exhaustion, heat stroke. And they're all various levels of hypothermia, what we call hypothermia.
Yeah.
Also, most people that are at risk are probably the elderly and also young children. What we need to think about is people that might appear well, but they've got, you know, some people have some serious medical conditions. So, yeah, don't forget, the heat can affect anybody.
What sort of things can we look for to note just perhaps someone is suffering from heat exhaustion, or what sort of symptoms would we watch out for?
Yeah, well, importantly, heat stroke. It certainly is. With heat stroke, for example, if people are confused, they start to have seizures, you know, they might be collapsing, they start to lose consciousness. I mean, that's a triple O call every day of the week. That's quite serious.
Don't muck about.
Obviously, before that, people will get headaches. This is if it's in the hot weather and it's heat-related. Obviously, they can be, there's plenty of other reasons they can get these symptoms, but if it's heat-related, you can get headaches and you can get vomiting, experience cramps, start to feel exhausted in the heat. So they're sort of early signs that you are being affected by the heat, you haven't kept your water up, and it's time to do some aggressive cooling. We're all pretty familiar with how that might be, but I can run through a few things. Obviously, stop the person doing what they're doing. If you are the first aider, let's say, or if it's you, just rest. Rest is really important. Go into a cool environment. You can spray someone with a water bottle, fans, air conditioners, you know, give them cold drinks. Even a cool bath or a cool shower, all of those kind of things we can do to cool people down, rehydrate them and getting feeling good again. And that's the thing, heat stroke and these sorts of things, they're preventable. So it doesn't have to happen if we look after ourselves.
Yes, I guess it's just a little bit harder to detect it in babies, but I guess you'd see them, their colour would be changing, they'd be getting rather hot, they'd be getting irritable, they'd be lethargic perhaps. I guess those are the symptoms. Would there be any other symptoms you'd look at for babies? I'm talking about fairly newborns and, you know, under two, perhaps.
No, you're spot on with all of that. Yeah, kids, babies, so the younger they are, obviously, the more vulnerable they are. Young children don't compensate as well with the heat and with a lot of things in general, but they don't compensate as well as a human. And also, they're much smaller, so they don't have as much muscle and fat insulation.
Yes.
As what adults do. So they can heat up, their body is affected, and they can heat up, you know, 3 to 5 times quicker than what an adult does. As far as symptoms go, yeah, like you say, all of those things that you said, as parents, we know when our children are normal and when they're happy and when they're running around, and we know what normal is. So parents usually pick up pretty quickly when their child's not acting normal.
Yes, and I guess you've just made an important point there, but this happens 3 to 5 times faster in a child than it does in an adult. So if you think, well, I'm feeling okay, or I'm flagging a little bit, but it's not serious. But, of course, you should be looking at the child or even the older person and realise that their tolerance is less than perhaps someone who's adult and fit and reasonably young, but who's fit and has got, as you said, a bigger body mass perhaps.
Absolutely. No, it happens so much quicker. But by the same token, children do get sick quicker, and they also respond to the treatment and cooling and everything much quicker than what adults do too. So there's an upside to it all as well.
So I guess the one word to think about is be watchful and be alert. Think about what you might need to do and do it quickly when it happens, or if it happens, to avert anything becoming more serious. I'd like to talk to you about something now which to me is so blatantly obvious, but it keeps on happening. And I'm talking about people who leave children in cars during the warm weather. People who leave even their animals in the car. I mean, I was in a place the other day. I was in my physiotherapist, and I was this lady walked in, and it was a hot day, and reasonably hot day. And she said, "Oh, how long is the appointment going to be, or when can I go in? Because I've got the dog in the car." It's all right, it's under a tree. And I thought, if the receptionist doesn't say something, I'm going to say something. But fortunately, the receptionist said, go and bring the dog in. It's quite all right, bring it in. It's dangerous to have them in the car. You know, I mean, it's so obvious. I mean, it wasn't. But, of course, we're talking about dogs there, and not that they're not important. But, of course, we have so many instances of children dying or becoming seriously injured as a result of being left in a car.
Be a bit controversial on this one too.
Oh, be for it. Go for it.
Are we allowed to be controversial on this show?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Look, firstly, everything you've said is true. So the temperature inside a car, it can double and obviously become deadly in just a very short period of time. And even on mild summer days, you know, the temperature inside a parked car can be 20 or 30 degrees hotter. You know, those sorts of things. Children, as you've said, particularly vulnerable just for all the reasons that we've spoken about. Also, pets are vulnerable too for the same sort of reasons. The controversial bit that I'll get to, obviously, over the years I've been called to many people locked in cars. And to be honest with you, most of the time, by the time we get there, there's nobody there. So even the person who's called has just driven off and there's no one there. So what I do want to say to your listeners today is make sure that it is an emergency. Make sure it's not just somebody who's left their child in the car and they've just popped into the ATM, you know, on the street there or into the bakery for a couple of minutes and buy a pie and then they're back out to their car. Now, I'm not going to go into any of the debate about whether you should even do that for a couple of minutes or not. But the other thing that we are finding a lot of is electric vehicles. So I don't have one, but they do have different modes on them, a lot of different. And I think like the Tesla one, for example, has got a dog mode or a pet mode. I think it's called something like that. Mm-hmm. So an electric vehicle can be sitting in the car park. And obviously you can't hear anything running because it's an electric vehicle, but sure. The air conditioning inside that car is blasting away. And they, on their big screens, I think when they're in this particular mode, the car is locked, the air conditioner is blasting away, and they've got on the screen inside the car that it might say what the temperature is, and it'll say that I'll be back in 5 minutes, or you can put, apparently the people can put a little message on there and say, or my dog's safe, or my child's safe. I'm not exactly sure how they do that, but so what we're finding is we are getting called to things like that, and I guess for 2 or 3 minutes at least, or 5 minutes while someone pops in somewhere, the person is quite comfortable. Now, I'm not going to argue whether you should take 3 children into the bakery to buy your lunch and back out 5 minutes in a 40 degree day, or whether it's better for them to sit in their air-conditioned car for 5 minutes, but what I will ask people to do is if they notice someone's locked in a car like that, can they please just check the situation out, make sure it is an emergency, and if they think it is, call 000, because when you call an ambulance for these sorts of things, you will get if it's an emergency, you will get a good response. So you'll get the ambulance, you'll get the police, you'll get the fire brigade, and quite often we utilise RACV too, because they can prompt response out of RACV. They can, you know, get into the car without braking it. But if it's an emergency and the child inside is looking like they're unwell, well, obviously services will do. You know, they'll break in and we can do what we need to do.
You make a very good point there, and I agree it is controversial, but it's also. It puts an extra responsibility on the bystander who is wanting to know whether to act. I mean, you see it yourself. I mean, there's nobody around. Do I think I should be breaking the window? I could be charged for damage here if I'm not careful. I guess the thing I'm trying to put it in a simple term is I would suggest think before you act, but don't think for too long. You know, I mean, you can, as you say, you can look through a window and you can see signs of distress in an animal or in a person, or you can see the fact that there seem to be asleep or whatever. And those are the sorts of things you probably need to think twice, well, to think about acting. But as you say there are all sorts of things. And I mean, I guess the first thing to do is ring 000 in that situation. They'll be able to talk you through it, I should imagine. They'll be asking a few questions.
There's no doubt with that. And the other thing I'll say, and I don't want to discourage people from calling.
No, not at all.
But obviously we don't want, you know, waste our time until we can get on to the next case. So if someone thinks that there's a pet or a child in a car that is in trouble like that, definitely call 000. And if the person comes out and they jump in their car and drive off, just please do us the courtesy of just calling 000 back.
Cancel the call.
And cancelling us. That's probably the main thing I'd like to ask. And that's all you have to do, make that one phone call. And once you cancel us, we will cancel all the other services that are on the way. We'll do the rest for you. We'll cancel the police and cancel fire services and all that sort of thing. So just let us know that it's not needed anymore. Probably the main point that I'd like to put across.
It's not just a courtesy. It's something else. Because, I mean, you could arrive there, sirens going and all the rest of it, and think you might be in the wrong street because there's no sign of anything. You know, you'd be running around looking at not taking the address you've been given, especially if it's in a shopping centre car park where it's not a number of a house or anything like that. You guys would be running around thinking, you know, there's got to be something here, or there's possibly something here. So please cancel that call if you found out you've called in error. That's the best thing to do. It's not only courteous, it could save valuable time and valuable angst for the emergency service who is turning up.
And don't get me wrong, if you've called, then definitely stay there because we absolutely love somebody who puts their hand up and waves to us because we know exactly where to go. And exactly what you say, if it's in a shopping centre car park, I mean, we can be wandering around for minutes, driving around trying to find a car.
And they're precious minutes.
If there's nobody there waving at us.
And you can't exactly speed around a car park because there'll be people with trolleys and all sorts of things in your path and everything. So I'd like to jump around a bit here if you wouldn't mind because I'm conscious of the time. We talk about calling an ambulance, and we talk about calling 000, but let's, without denigrating anything we've just said about the need to do those things, let's talk about something else, because there are alternative care options that people can access in Victoria, and I'd like to talk about them. We've got the Victorian Virtual Emergency Department, and called VVED, and that's a great resource for listeners. So what do they need to know about it, and how does it work, please?
This is something we really want to get people to know about. And alternative pathways, so if I can just take just a minute to go through a few things to keep in people's mind other things, and then we'll get to the virtual ED, and I will explain that if people don't know. But obviously, for non-life-threatening emergencies or things, you go to your GP, you go to your local doctor, but I think we're talking here things that are a little bit more urgent than waiting for a couple of days to get into your doctor, but they're not life-threatening. You know, you've got your GP, pharmacy is another good one. Your pharmacist, yes, they can help out with a lot of infections and rashes and bits and pieces. And pharmacists are so knowledgeable. They're a great source for medical advice, so don't forget them. There's another really important one I'd like people to know about is urgent care clinics. Now, they've been set up by the government for exactly that, for urgent care, urgent health care, but it's not life-threatening. And so you can go into them. If you're thinking it's not life-threatening, but you might be thinking going down to the emergency department, think urgent care clinic, look it up, give them a call first and tell them what the issue is, and they'll probably be able to accept you. Now, I'm thinking when someone's cut themselves and they need stitches, you don't have to go to an emergency department. They'll be able to do that. Simple fractures, they've got x-ray on site and they can treat simple fractures, sprains and strains, infections, fevers, all of those sorts of things. They're bulk billed, they're free, and they're just a great resource, and it stops you having to wait in an emergency department for a long time. Obviously, nurse on call is another one, but I just like people to know that there are a number of options that you can do, but virtual ED, virtual emergency department, is just absolute gold. We use it in ambulance as well to safety net people, but what we'd like people to do is quite often call this resource before they even call an ambulance. It's available across Victoria. It's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And what you do, it's a video consultation on your phone or your iPad or whatever it might be with an actual emergency doctor from one of the Melbourne emergency departments. So it's an actual consultation. So you're getting the same doctor that if you went into emergency and waited for a couple of hours, if that happened to be a busy day, to speak to a doctor, you're speaking to the same doctor and getting the same advice straight away.
Yes, and so the address for that, if the best thing to do is go to the website firstly, www.vved.org.au. And if you want to find details of all of these things, urgent care clinics, nurses on call, all the information there is on the Ambulance Victoria website. So whilst you're not under any pressure out there, folks, go and have a look at the Ambulance Victoria website. It's got a wealth of information for you. And as I mentioned, it's got those numbers. So if you want to take those numbers or website addresses, whatever, stick them on something on the fridge or something. If you ever have need of them, it'll save you going to your computer and wondering where to go. But go to Ambulance Victoria. It's the easy place. That's the central place on your computer. And you'll find the details of that website I gave you for the VED. For the nurses on call, your phone telephone numbers there, and urgent care clinics, you'll find out where they are as well. So there it is. And just go to your Ambulance Victoria website. That's the thing. Just simply type in Ambulance Victoria. It'll take you there and have a look around. Rick, thank you very much for your time today. I really appreciate it. Rick Mitchell, the acting team leader there at Belgrave office there of Ambulance Victoria. Again, thank you for the work you do and for all your colleagues out there, because it's very much appreciated.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
Have a great day, mate. Enjoy the rest of your day, and thank you for giving up your time this morning. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye for now, and stay hydrated, mate. Okay.
I will.
Okay. There he is, Rick Mitchell from Ambulance Victoria, and very nice to talk to him, as we said. And Ambulance Victoria, go to their website, and you'll find out all those details there. The VVED, that's the Victorian Virtual Emergency Department. You'll find the details there, your phone number there, there's a website. I won't give them to you now, because I want you to go and have a look for yourself. Nurses on Call was a telephone number for that. Urgent care clinics, where they are, and what they can help you with is all there, and so it's so important. And don't forget, in an absolute emergency, 000 is the number to call, as always, and they'll see you right.